Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 non-profit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
In this episode, I am joined by Claire Holloway, founder of the Centre of Bright Beans in Perth. Claire shares her powerful personal journey from engineering in the mining industry to motherhood, infertility, chronic pain, and ultimately creating a holistic practice supporting parents through matronescence, the transition to motherhood. So in this podcast, we get chatting about many, many things, and Claire so eloquently discusses this topic and many others. We talk about Claire's lived experience in infertility, birth challenges, chronic pain, and how these have shaped her work, the philosophy of matronescence and why naming this tradition validates women's experiences, her perspective on birth autonomy and how yoga philosophy and home birth align as practices of self-sovereignty, the creation of her Yoga for Home Birth program designed specifically for those birthing outside the system, and insights on pelvic floor health, the importance of breath, and rebalancing strength with softness. She has a free community gathering for home birthing parents, and also both in person and in Perth, and she's doing that online as well at the moment. So broader conversations on cultural context, intergenerational trauma, and also honouring Indigenous birthing knowledge. It is really a rich, empowering, and very emotional discussion about birth, identity, and reclaiming the wisdom of our bodies and communities. So hope you really enjoy. To help us spread this beautiful knowledge for all the podcasts and the guests that we have on, like, subscribe, share, talk about it with your friends, and it really empowers us to bring you more beautiful content and empowering content and good quality, amazing knowledge. So if you have any suggestions for guests that you'd wish that we would interview, or even topics that you'd love us to speak about, then please send those through. We welcome them always, and it's fabulous to get your feedback as much as possible. So without further ado, I'll introduce Claire.
Welcome to the show, Claire Holloway.
Thank you so much, Jodi. I'm so excited to be here. I'm speaking to you in a bit of a different format to last time, but it's nice to be able to have some open-ended time for a chat.
Yeah, I know. It's so we had a practical session last time you were here at the clinic, which is beautiful. Now we can get into the nitty-gritty of, because I think I was trying to half listen and half do the things that you're asking me of, and we don't always retain everything, do we? So I'm actually going to be very happy to hear it all again. So firstly, I always ask everyone this because I think we are all people who love stories, and I think it's the best way of remembering. So what is your story behind where you've landed here in this space? And we'll discover where your intricacies of how you move through this space as we go through the podcast. But I always like to know how you landed here, because I know you had, as we all do, your own journey as well.
Yeah, thank you. It's always really special to be able to share your story. So it's wonderful that you allow people to do so. And definitely that's why I'm here, because of my story, doing what I do. To try and condense it so it doesn't take up the whole podcast, just like jump in with questions as I go if you want. But so my background in my adult life is actually as a metallurgical engineer. And I was kind of doing my career woman thing in a very male-dominated industry. Met my husband there, even though I said I would never marry another engineer. Whoops. and then we were kind of both working in a similar field. And I think the big story for me started when my matrescence journey started. So at that kind of period of time, I always knew I wanted to have kids. I'm from a big family. I'm one of six children. I have 42 cousins. So children was always kind of on my radar. And when, you know, started to have the conversation with my partner about that, and we started into that process, I realized things weren't working out easily for me. And that was, I just figured, because I was from a family, lots of kids, you know, I thought the genetics would be great. I'd be fine. So I hadn't really put too much focus or thought into it, which was interesting considering I was right into like health and fitness in my leisure time. And what I started to realize as I had that bit of a shock to my system and really had to take a step back and have a hard look at myself was that I was really heavily operating in my left brain. So like linear, logical, strategic, engineering, Excel spreadsheety brain, and also really putting a lot of emphasis on the masculine parts of myself to be able to kind of like keep up and perform in a very masculine run and dominated space. And it was in starting to realize that I had basically just discarded the right brain and feminine parts of myself somewhere along my journey for many reasons, not just the work I was in, but my upbringing and that as well, and start to reclaim some of them, that I started to also reclaim my fertility and my health that I really didn't know I was actually missing. And during that journey, it took me to some interesting places, because during that time, we actually moved to Groote Island in the Northern Territory, which is a remote island that's under the custodianship of the Anindilyakwin people. And the town we were living in, Aliangoola, has about a population of about 1,000. It was a mining town. My husband had moved there for work, so I moved there, and I started to transition away from some of that mining work as a real conscious step away from where that had taken me. And so I went to some part-time work helping set up a daycare there, and at the same time I was doing what I could, but it was a really interesting situation. For example, I really wanted to do try some acupuncture and some herbal kind of support, but obviously there wasn't any of that support there. So on the occasions when we would fly off the island, because that was really the only way on and off, I would make sure I stayed an extra night in Darwin, and I'd go and get some acupuncture done. I'd grab my herbs. So it was like this very, you know, just fitted in where I could. And so the rest, I really had no choice, but I went on a very self-directed learning journey. So I was listening to all the podcasts, I was reading all the books, and I was really just making the most of what I could. Even living on the island, we had grocery delivery come from the mainland once a week. So you had to make the most of what came, get the fresh stuff, you know, all those things you're thinking about during that fertility period, about how you are nourishing yourself, all that kind of thing. So I think there were so many elements there that I started to build a little toolkit for myself. And then I did eventually conceive, which was very exciting, and had my pregnancy journey on the island. But there wasn't the facilities there for birth in the case that something was to happen. So they got everyone to leave the island at about 36 weeks. So I then was choosing, so you could just get flown with the health system in the Northern Territory. You could get flown to Gove, which is just on the mainland, or and that was covered for you, or you could fly elsewhere if you had family or you wanted to choose something different. And I remember this was one of the really big turning points for me. So I remember realizing as I was going through that process of I'll go home to family I had in Southeast Queensland, that kind of thing, that I realized that the Indigenous people of the island, the true landowners, who that is their home and where they would want to birth and raise their children, they were being taken away from their home for this birthing period, this huge transformational period. Whereas me, as someone who had come to that land, I was getting the choice to go back to my home. And that just really, it really hit home for me, the disparity there, and how much work there is to do in that space. So I've been, one of the little things that I've been on a journey of since is exploring that further, understanding my place in that, my what small steps I can take around that. And also just it really, I guess, opened the door for me to start thinking about what freedom of birth choice really means. And that, I mean, obviously it was an iterative process. So with my first child, I ended up, I was being told on the island that his head was down, but when I did go off the island and went into some more specialized care, I found out he was breached. It was 37 weeks. I tried all the things, couldn't turn him. So I ended up with a unplanned C-section. My husband didn't make it on time because I went into labor before he got there. And so that was another interesting one, you know, just the challenges of distance. But I had my family, like my parents were there. So, yeah. So my hope for a natural birth didn't go to plan in that respect, but I think I needed probably some of those learnings in my life. What I didn't need that did happen though, and this was the other big pivotal moment and has ongoingly been for me, was at 32 weeks pregnant. So before I left the island, had a fall. It was just total accident. I slipped in some water in the laundry. Did the splits. I've never done the splits in my life before. Really not ideal. 32 weeks. And I ended up with a groin injury and an inguinal hernia. So I was in quite strong pain for the rest of my pregnancy. There wasn't really anything they could do about it. And I'm sure it contributed to bub not being in a great position. Anyway, I had been told, you know, once you have the baby and all the pressure's off, it'll probably go away, settle down, or you can just get a little patch put in and it will be fine. That didn't happen for me. The pain came back. It got worse. I tried the surgical route, which I now, knowing more, regret, but, you know, it happened. And the pain just got worse and worse. And so I ended up with years of chronic pain and trying to manage being a mum for the first time, raising a child in a remote community with very little support, no family, and chronic pain. So it was pretty much all the things. And yeah, it was during that journey that I really dived into or deepened into my yoga practice, and I started to study yoga quite deeply. And I was also to just support myself through the pain. Basically, I was in this cycle of survival where I was just getting through the hours of the day that I needed to show up for my son. Any minute he was sleeping, I was doing something to try and minimize my pain. Somewhere in there, I was eating, and then the cycle would continue. And it became, as it does for many people who suffer chronic pain, all-consuming kind of thing where you're just trying to find a way out of the pain. And one of the tools that I started to bring in, coming back to the tools I'd used on my fertility journey and obviously with yoga and a few other things that I had really drawn upon, I had started journaling. And as I dived into my yoga study, I started to notice that what I was writing about, which I now understand was my experience of moving through matrescence, the concepts and the fundamentals behind them were matching up with the yoga philosophy that I was learning about. And as I started to realize this, I started questioning, like, why have I never heard any of this when I've gone to yoga classes or practiced yoga? And so as I eventually started to step into a teaching role in yoga, I started incorporating that into my work, and then incorporated that also into my planning for a second child. I was very unsure whether I would even have a second child for a long time there because I wasn't sure about whether I'd be able to manage it with the pain. But thankfully, I was able to go down a bit of a healing path and in many things. And I chose to have a birth outside the hospital system with my second child and had a beautiful VBAC, so a vaginal birth after a cesarean. with my midwife, Jamie, in Launceston, where we had moved to by then. And that was really empowering experience for me and has then really informed a lot of the work I've done since in supporting other people who are home birthing or birthing at home outside the hospital system. And also just the context of that in this freedom of birth choice that I mentioned earlier. So yeah, hopefully that I summed that up okay for you.
Good. I think it pretty much follows where I wanted to go exactly, because your story, your experience, there's obviously such a passion behind it, and for you to experience firsthand all these things that you want and are supporting people with now is just, it's an incredible thing to know what it feels like and to know what it to go through. And I think I love the terms that you use, matronescence. And when I first heard these from you at the start of the year, it was something that, again, and myself studied a bit of yoga in the past, it just made so much sense the way that you explained that it follows these areas of change that enables a woman to become a mother. And even prior to that, and how you feel through the pregnancies and some of these things that you had to go through on an island on your own. And I think it's a blessing, as you would probably see that, is that you got to experience something completely different to what others would experience most of the time, but also see what was necessary and what was missing, and then to fill those gaps in what people are wanting to see. And, you know, as you said, I think it's beautiful that you had to, you know, have your food only delivered once a week. There's no convenience that we have now. And I think that's a detriment to what we actually experience now, is that we have too much convenience and we take everything for granted and we don't actually empower ourselves in ways that we can make the best choices for ourselves, our babies and our families, and our land that we live on. And that's what I also love that you talk about, you know, and knowing that this area that you were, you know, experiencing, and that Wadjuk people, and when you're talking about this within what you do as well. And I really, really love that. So let's start with maybe a little bit more exploration of matronescence. And so I know you've said it in terms of your own journey, but how do you guide and explain that to women who are hearing this for the first time?
Well, you did a great job summing it up. So well done.
It comes with a job.
Yeah. So in really simple terms, as you said, it's that transition where we have a woman or an adult moving to a mother or a parent, but it can also not be the first time that they're doing this as well. I believe it's an iterative process. So every time you start that cycle again, if you're having more than one child, it kind of begins again. Obviously you start with a layer of experience, but you know, it's the same cycle. And the big thing about matrescence, the word is, I'm excited that it's starting to become more used and more heard of, but it's definitely not mainstream yet. I don't think it's yet in the dictionary, but one helpful way to get the vibe of it is to think, and this is kind of where the root of it comes from, if we think of the word adolescence as a summary of the transition children go as they move to becoming an adult, and you think about what comes with that. So it happens on a number of layers. So there's obviously the physical changes that happen during adolescence. There's the hormonal, there's the emotional, as we all know about. There's the changes in mentality. And then there's also that, that adjustment that's occurring for the person of like, where do I fit in now? And who am I now? And it's exactly the same, but obviously placed upon a different stage of life for matrescence. So we've got the different layers again. We've got obviously huge physical changes occurring as you're gestating, growing another human, and then birthing them. The hormonal again goes along with all that as well, and the emotional, that it's like a huge tearing open of all your emotions spilling out as you go through that portal in that period. And then the mental side of things, both from, you know, the mindset that's required to navigate everything that happens, but then also to even below that, yes, similar to adolescence, where you're questioning like, what is my role in the world now? Who am I now? But for some people, even a layer below that, which is the spiritual experience of it, which can be this For some really transformational time, for some it's almost like that that moment of darkness and void for a while before we come out the other side. A little bit like I like to say the heroine's journey or the hero's journey, where there has to be, not there has to be, that there is usually in these stories a darker point that there's a growth that comes out of that. And that really, for so many people that I support and then I hear their stories, there's always that point somewhere along the matrescence journey. For some people it's earlier on, for some people it's more to do even with their conception story, and for some it's later, some it's the birth, some it's even into the postpartum and parenting. And it really is looking at it as this continuum. And it's not really a continuum, unlike adolescence, where eventually you become an adult. Although I guess we can sometimes question that in people, but matrescence doesn't really stop, because once you have a child, there, that's kind of it. You're a parent, you're a mum, and that change in responsibility is there.
Absolutely. I love how you make it so clearly defined. And I think that's really important for a lot of people, and also understanding of a concept in like this. It's not a concept, it's an actual, progress. But for me to even hear you plainly state these things, it makes it so much more understandable of what even I went through as a mum twice. So, it's not given enough attention, this transition. And I think this is obviously, you understand this way more than me. This is why you're driving this passion. But it makes me realize that both medically, both nutritionally, both mentally, both emotionally, both physically, the recovery that it takes for the body to come, we'll get into that in a minute with you. But it's just so much that is transitioning and transforming, and it literally is a miracle. And we all know this when we are going through it, or we're diving into it, or we're trying to conceive, and we realize how actually hard it is to conceive on those really intimate, like milliseconds of a moment. But it's literally a miracle. But we just sort of go into the hospital, you have your baby, goodbye. Nothing. Poof. It's like, you've got this, you know what to do. It's like, well, we don't. We're meant to be passed on knowledge by our, elders or grandparents, but that doesn't happen as much anymore, because we don't have those communities and those focused, solid family units anymore. I think it's just such incredible work that you are doing, and the way you explain it is incredible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think there's something about the word, even just the essence of the word. And I've trained with Amy Taylor-Cabaz, who's probably the leader in Australia in championing and pioneering the idea of matrescence. And I love how she says that the word is the validation. And once people have heard the word and they understand it, all of a sudden their experience has a validation behind it. And I think that's why this word can be so powerful. It's like the starting point for that deeper understanding of the kind of like what just happened to me. And I think the other thing that matrescence, the word and the concept, does is it speaks to, so we have these statistics at the moment in Australia, and I know elsewhere as well, that it's 1 in 5 women in the perinatal, so pregnant and postpartum period, are experiencing anxiety and depression, which is something obviously that needs to be done about. But even when we look at the 4 in 5, or even maybe some of those 1 in 5, we can start to ask, is it that they're not being supported in this transition? Is this one of the causes? Like, definitely there are clinical situations of anxiety and depression happening, but how much of the struggles that people are facing is because matrescence is not being recognized, and in it not being recognized, it's not being supported properly. Like, you think about high school, people being very aware that the kids are going through adolescence, there's counselors and support advisors and all these people, they do their personal development work, all this stuff, but those kind of venues are definitely not mainstream for a woman. As you said, it's like, get to your 6 weeks, check, go to the GP, they tick a couple of boxes. At the moment, most of them don't even touch you. And then it's like, yep, you're healthy, your baby's healthy, good to go. And that's when it gets hard, when the like excitement of the birth and the new baby has worn off and everyone's gone back to their lives. That's when it gets hard, and that's when matrescence gets hard. Yeah.
Absolutely, you're 100%. And I think we'll speak into this in a moment, and I want to dive more into your yoga for home birth and home birth itself now. I think it's sort of like a really good leeway. And I had the two different systems myself. So I had family birthing center, which was still mainstream a little bit more, but then ended up in the main hospital. And then second birth was home birth, water birth, didn't touch any GP, doctor, mainstream, and just had my midwife from the whole start to finish journey. And my gosh, was that different. It was incredible. And I'm so myself grateful that I had experienced both. So then again, I can have the empathy and understand what others are going through and explain that. And also gives context to them, you know, to know that you have some experience in both and to know where you sit on that fence of what felt better personally. And so it can help make those decisions easier for people to give it a go, you know, or just not have, so trusting it a little bit more. So yeah, I want to touch when we talk about yoga for home birth, and I know you've got the program, so talk to me about that, and then the importance of this transitional journey, but also physically, because I think, and I love to advocate for women and to be like, I always tell women that they are training for a marathon. So, you know, we have to be our strongest, bestest, incredible lionesses that we can be, obviously not overdoing it, but we need to understand that our body needs to be strong, and we are powerful women that can do this, and our bodies are designed this way, but we have to look after the temple that we have. So let's explore a bit of that now.
Oh, yes, definitely. Obviously, I love this topic, so let's go. So I guess, is it helpful if I start with why combine yoga and home birth in the same sentence or as like a program?
Yes.
So I guess when I created the program, it was because I noticed a big gap that, yes, there's so much prenatal yoga out there, and there's obviously so many birth education courses, but no one was really supporting specifically the people who are birthing outside the system. It was all very generic. And with my experience in both, with a foot in both, and also with my yoga experience, I really identified that right from the get-go, when someone is making a choice to step away from a real systematized approach and medicalized approach to birth, that the process for actually preparing for and supporting that needs to be inherently different. And the big reason for that is because choosing to birth outside the system is a step towards personal autonomy or self-governance, basically. It's a step towards reclaiming your choices and your decision and being kind of the center of the care, as opposed to just being put in a mold and a box, depending on like how old you are, what you weigh, what your blood sugar might be, all those kind of things. So there's a lot more ability for your situation to be treated as very unique and individualized in the birth at home setting. Also then with the care being more that continuity of care model and that one-on-one support, this all leads towards the more possibility of autonomy. Don't get me wrong, it doesn't always happen in all situations. Birth at home is not perfect. No care provider is perfect. We sometimes end up back in the hospital system, but it's the sentiment of it and really that first step. And with that idea of autonomy happening there, that's actually the purpose of yoga. So a lot of people think the purpose of yoga is to stretch or to get their yoga bods so they can go to the beach. And sadly, the Western world has done a really good job of culturally appropriating and taking those bits out of yoga. But if we really look at the fundamental philosophies of yoga at the heart of what it is, yoga is actually a state of being as opposed to a thing we do to begin with. And then that state of being is a state of autonomy. And that's the kind of, you know, you might hear talk about or reflections about, you know, like people becoming enlightened, or that yoga is a form of liberation. What they're talking about, that enlightenment, that liberation, is literally people just coming back to being fully in control and fully connected to their truth, their decisions, and actually working through all those different layers of conditioning that happen to us in society, even in our family unit, all those kind of things, starting to like peel off those layers and find what's absolute truth below that. So that's where, when I could see those two things, it's one and the same. Like, home birth is a form of yoga inherently of itself because of that choice and that step towards autonomy. So that's kind of where, sorry, I was getting a bit heavy philosophy there on you, but that's where the whole concept came about for me when I started to see that. I actually literally, on my whiteboard behind me as I'm speaking to you, I have something written up here, which is matrescence is yoga, because yoga connects you to the authentic, intuitive parent or caregiver that you are. And I think when people are choosing birth outside the hospital system, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for authenticity. They're looking to tap into their intuition and to really access that primal and innate wisdom that they and their baby have. Yeah. And by choosing that place at home, then they're really giving themselves the best chance to let go of all the other distractions and actually be there. Yeah. Mm. So that's kind of the fundamental philosophy behind it. Mm. I guess then, to speak into that, when I spoke about matrescence before, I talked you through a couple of different layers of the self. So I was talking about the physical shifts, emotional, mental. And in yoga, we actually have a model of care for this called the five koshas. Many people listening might have heard of the biopsychosocial model in more mainstream healthcare, which I think is great that there's more moving in that direction, which is looking at people not as a meat suit, but their biology, their psychology, and their social context. Yoga kind of adds to this even more. So we look at the physical layer, the emotional layer, the mental layer, but then we also look at the wisdom layer, and even a layer below this, which is the bliss layer. And the bliss layer, referring to, like, you think of those moments during the birthing process when conditions are created appropriately, where the oxytocin is flowing, where there's this otherworldly experience, that first moment that baby is held skin to skin straight after the cord isn't cut early, all those things. This is when we can access that deepest layer and have that moment of accessing that true autonomy that is yoga. So the program Yoga for Home Birth is really about spending time in each of these layers, supporting each of these layers. So of course we do some look at the physiology and the physical, pelvis, all those kind of things. But then we start to step below that. We look at processing unprocessed emotions and how that affects our choices. We look into, say, vairagya, which is a concept in yoga around discernment. So making discerning choices that aren't influenced by our conditioning. Looking at facing our fears, and both how we can work through some of those fears through a process of parigraha, which means letting go, but then also facing things such as pain and tools to manage that. And then even with the breathing, which is obviously in a lot of birth education courses, it's very non-prescriptive. So rather than saying, okay, this is how you should breathe in first stage labor, but then when you get to pushing, you should breathe like that. No. We look at, firstly, let's look at breathing in general and breath mechanics, and let's check how your breath is going. Are you getting a full, complete breath in general? And then let's look at ways that you can tweak and control your own breath depending on the situation. For some people during birth, they're going to feel exhausted and they need an uplifting breath that's going to give them more energy. For other people, they're feeling anxious, they need a calming breath that's going to bring them back into that parasympathetic state. And you can't prescribe that. It's something that happens in the moment. And by teaching people to practice and understand what they need in any moment and what tools they can then draw on, then that's really coming back to this autonomy of them being able to support and empower themselves in the moment, as opposed to having to follow a set of instructions or a recipe that may or not actually suit them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, I feel like I talked for a while. So just check in now. Was that kind of what you wanted me to share?
Many throughout the questions. You run completely on your own, which is awesome. But I think I'd like to just have a few. I just pull apart, you know, some of these key things that you say, because I think you so beautifully said it all. And just the words that you use to describe this, it just I was in awe when you came to the clinic, just how clear, how you can explain things with technical language that we may not understand or hear, but it all makes sense, and it just sounds so beautiful. But you know what you said about the endorphins and yes, the autonomy around birth, and I feel like you've said this, and I think it's just really good to drive into that, in that how much autonomy is removed from us in the birth. And women who have gone through the system like this will completely understand. They feel powerless, and you don't understand what's going on. You're never told what's happening, but it's your body and your baby, yet you have no idea what's going on, and it's super scary, and the fear is there. And I love to tell people when you know, now I've had my experience a second time, and I was, you know, pulled up on my bullshit by my midwife, and she got me out in the, she's like, you're not going to have the same birth as the last time. You're going to go down to the ocean and clear that energy, because I'm not feeling good from you. And you sweat. She swore at me. You fucking go down the ocean and do it. I'm like, okay. Woo. And then wouldn't you know it, an hour later, I'm in labor and birthing 3 hours. So, you know, it's just really good to have that belief in someone or someone close to you, and then yourself, that you actually have this and someone to give that to you. And people will talk crap about birth all the time, and I love to pull them up on this, and they're like, birthing's hard, it's so painful, oh gosh, it's such a big deal. I'm like, no, it can be orgasmic, and we've proven that it can be orgasmic. We are given all the most beautiful chemical highs that we could ever get, better than anything that we could in terms of the drug and external world. We have it all within us. We have DMT, we have anandamide, we have the bliss chemicals. So why can't we utilize that and actually share that part of birth versus all the unautonomous, if that's a word, versions of it that we only see in the media and on videos and on documentaries? It's so that this is why I love speaking with you on this, because I'm also equally as passionate.
Yes, it's so true. And just to speak to that, it's just brought up for me something I think is helpful to share. So I actually also run a free home birth community catch up. And I do that in person here in Perth, but I'm also actually starting an online one as well, so people from anywhere can join. And what I've really noticed, and why I'm so passionate about offering that as a free place and a safe space for these people, is because, you know, you're just saying about all the like trash talking that happens about birth. What is just a recurring theme is that these people who do birth at home and have this wonderful, blissful experience, when they get put in their mum's group, or they go and talk to other people they know who've had a birth and have had these hospitalized births, they don't feel they can even share their beautiful story, because they feel like they're then not being considerate to perhaps the trauma or the difficulty that their friends or acquaintances have gone through. And it's such a terrible loss, because we're never going to change the story around birth and the general societal view around birth unless these stories are shared and told. So what has organically ended up happening is these community catch-ups, and this space has been a safe space where these people can start to speak about what their experiences was and their birth. And when they start to share it, what I notice is it's really a step on their matrescence journey, where they start to realize how powerful it was, and it gives them the confidence to really step back out into the world and into something special and new, as many people do when they have this shake-up that matrescence does for us. And they kind of come out the other side a different and an even better version of themselves, really.
That's right. Yeah. And I think to have the power of a community behind you to be like, well, I'm not the only one, and I'm not the weirdo group. You guys are the weirdos for not knowing what this all is. I felt exactly the same. I never went to any mother's groups. I got to a mother's group twice, I think I went, and I looked around. I'm like, yeah, not my people. Okay, goodbye. and just went to yoga, went to baby yoga instead. And so had a much better understanding group of people to be around with. But it's having that power within yourself to then speak up to what's true for you. And I think that's why it's so powerful to have people around you that also can give you that strength, because you're already you're doubting yourself in these new journeys that you don't know. And nothing, there's no handbook on this. There's lots of Googling, and that doesn't really do much either other than make you more anxious. So talk to me a little bit more about your sort of combination, because I know you do Bowen yoga, and let's talk about more of the sort of that space, but also physically how you see women going through all of this, because there is, as we said, there is so much that we have to change in our body. I was trying to explain this to my son the other day, he's 13. He's like, oh, so, because he's learning biology at high school. I was like, Mum, is there any empty space in our body? I'm like, no, there's not. It's all jammed in there. You know, when I did the cadavers at uni, you know, it's quite tight. Like, there's not much room. And then I said to him, I'm like, now imagine there's a baby growing in there. And he's like, oh, where does everything go? And I said, I'm like, it all gets squished and pushed up. And then that's why you can't breathe and you can't poo and then you can't eat. And he's looking at me going, oh, gosh, Mum. And then you have to push the baby out. And I'm like, yes, exactly. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know where that fits. I'm like, I know. And they get bigger and bigger and bigger. But how incredible is the body comes back to this? And I'm like, look at him. And I said to him, I'm like, look, Mum's got a six pack now. So, you know, you can't see any of that. So we had a good laugh. But the physical changes are enormous, right? And so there's a lot to be supported there. Yeah. So I think comment on that would be good.
I just love that you started from the like 13-year-old perspective. It's so fresh. I just love it. And I think we all need to sometimes, because I think that everything has been so overcomplicated and there's so much conflicting information out there now about both prenatal support and preparation and postpartum recovery. A good example is the recommendations around diastasis recti. Basically everything, many people haven't caught up yet, but in the last 5 years, throw out the rule book. Everything that was said is really wrong. New evidence is showing really different approaches are needed. And so it just goes to show how, you know, when we get too caught up in pure scientific data that is during a difficult period to actually do scientific study, because, you know, there's only so many things you can do on a pregnant person because they've got a baby in there. We need to look beyond that. And I think looking beyond that comes back to people trusting their own body more rather than being, you know, told, oh, this is what I should be doing. So the couple of key things I want to share on that is, firstly, I think, so I'm sure Kegels have helped a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. You know, we don't want people suffering from incontinence, and some people do need to re-strengthen, to strengthen their pelvic floor. And most people need to do some level of that in the postpartum period. However, what I see time and time again is a couple of things. If people don't know what Kegels means, pelvic floor engagement exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, that there's not a huge amount of education out there or checking in out there to actually check if people are finding the right muscles. So they're told to engage their pelvic floor, but, you know, there's so many different ways people might interpret that. And sometimes they're actually overtraining the wrong muscles, causing all sorts of other problems. Also then, people who have a tendency, and I put my hand up as one of these people, to like, if you're told, oh, you should do this and do like one set of 10 each day, they'll go off and do three sets of 30 each day and become a little bit over obsessive with it and end up with problems as well with being over hypertonic, so too tight there. And then also it creates so much fear. So much fear around a part of the body that is inherently designed to be beautifully synchronized with the breath. And this is the other thing so many are missing is no one's checking how the person's breathing. So there's some beautiful videos out there of ultrasound showing the way that the diaphragm and the pelvic floor actually move in unison naturally when we breathe. Totally unconsciously to us, they move in unison. So as the diaphragm moves down, the pelvic floor softens. And as the diaphragm moves up for the exhale, the pelvic floor very gently starts to engage. And if we're not synchronizing with our breath, then what chance does our oral pelvic floor have? And also then, if we're not doing, because as with any muscle in our body, to work effectively, it needs to be able to move through its whole range of motion. If we're fixated on strengthening it and we're not actually releasing it, then yeah, you can see what can happen. So so I think that, well, my opinion and what I teach is more around the concept in yoga of sthira sukham, which means steadiness and ease. And it's working towards, and again, it's unique to every person. Every person's body is different. Working towards an understanding and a interoception or a felt sense in your own body of having this sense of stability, steadiness, and strength at the same time as having the capacity to also feel easefulness and relaxation and, you know, that trust and softness as well. And I think because our society so values strength and output and this kind of thing, the softness and the easefulness gets forgotten along the way. Mm. And we so need that for birth. I think a lot of the time people are so worried about, they're told all these horror stories of what can happen to their pelvic floor after. So they're trying to keep it as strong as possible right up until day dot. And this actually preparing it through softness, which is the body is trying to do already with the hormones that are coming through, the relaxin and the stretching of the ligaments and everything like that. That, you know, we can support that more. So, yeah, so I guess that's the way I approach it. The other thing too then is that the pelvic floor doesn't work in isolation. It's, and as I've already just suggested with the synchronization with the diaphragm, but then we can look at other diaphragms in the body, the arches of the feet, our glottis, or like in our throat, the jaw, there's different, and they all are connected to each other, both fascially and in the way that they have similar functions of like a little pump or a trampoline, if you think about that kind of movement. But even beyond that, I think a lot of the time, people, because of the way, again, the way we do or don't move in society, and then the types of exercises we're encouraged to do, which tend to be very like focused on let's build this particular muscle and let's isolate it and let's strengthen it. A lot of us do not have a great level of proprioception, which is just the awareness of where your body is in space. And really being able to feel into things. So I spend a lot of time with people, them starting to really be able to feel the bony landmarks of the pelvis. So like the sit bones, the tailbone, and the pubic bone, and noticing where those bony landmarks are when they do certain movements, when they breathe, starting to, again, come back to their autonomy. If I tuck my tailbone a little bit, how do I feel now? How does that shift how I feel? What if I point it out behind me a little bit more? That kind of thing. But then also being aware, there's all these other muscles attaching into this area as well. So we've got the muscles above, the abdominals and the back muscles, and then we've got, you know, all the amazing muscles of the thighs as well. And none of this is in isolation. All the fascia is linked. And, yeah, so looking above and below as well, up and down that chain. Mm-hmm. And, again, did I go off on a tangent there?
No, perfect. Again, beautifully said. I could just leave it right there. But but I do agree with you completely on all of it. But I think there is an over statedness on the strength of the pelvic floor, for sure. Yeah. Because I now have discovered this with many, many, many women now in practice, plus myself, in that, yes, we need to have strong muscles, but we also need to relax them. Mm-hmm. And like you say, it's like, all ranges of motion and all connectedness needs to be considered. Even when it comes to our physical body strength and our muscles, we have to have our fascial chains in the right way. We have to have our functional styles of movement and the way that we're doing things in the correct way. Otherwise, we get injuries and we overcompensate. There's no difference to the pelvic floor. It's like probably the most important muscle when we think about it to actually bring human life to form. So really, like, we need to be feeling that that's pretty, you know, a bit of incontinence later on. Oh, well, we've brought a human into this world. But a lot of the time, incontinence comes from, sort of rounding that off a little bit through my own experience and clients, is that when we see pelvic floor and we understand and we go to physios and yogic techniques or anything there, it is more understanding the release of that and actually relaxing it. And the birthing process is a relaxing. It needs to be strong afterwards, but it's the relaxing of that. And that's where complications or not being able to let go fully can actually cause more harm than good. So I think it's good to understand as well, like you say, it's this interconnectedness. And what I didn't fully recognize when I was going through pelvic floor looks at myself is that the understanding of the nervous system and the bladder and the pelvic floor. And so, you know, yes, there's this cradle that we need to be looking after, but if we're not connected and we're overstimulated and we don't have enough sleep and we don't really know what's going on there, we don't signal correctly, we can learn bad habits, number one, but that can also be one of the things that causes us that incontinence. And so I found that really fascinating to think about. So when we're talking about breath, it's not just helping that connection between there and the pelvic floor, but it's also the vagal nerves, and it's the relax, you know, everything that comes along with that. It's that connection again, yeah. Right? We've come full circle almost, as like matronescence is that connection back to self. And so we need to understand that to then go, well, how can we bring birth or to bring a human into this world if we're not even connected to ourselves as a human?
So exactly, 100%.
All right. So enough of that. I think we could go on forever, and I would love to talk about this topic forever with you. Maybe we do need to have another one, because I think there's so much more that I would even like to talk about with you in terms of the land, Australia itself, you know, what is going on here, and even then that connection, like you say, you know, when they have been taken off their land to go on birth and then you're bring back home. So how much knowledge have we lost within that? I remember going to the Tea Tree Lakes near Byron Bay and just reading the signs about sacred birthplaces of Aboriginal women, and you know, I felt sad for our culture and sad for theirs too, because now they don't have that. But I felt sad for us too, that we actually don't have a sacred birthing practice. It really hit home. And I think, and that's why we are so disconnected with the whole process, and so much trauma is surrounding that too. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. I think that sadly, Australian culture is built on trauma. It's the trauma of what many of our ancestors actually did here that's still held in our bloodlines and in our body. And I think because a moment like birth and a transition like matrescence brings forth all that intergenerational history, I really, truly believe it's part of it. And on the flip side, I interviewed recently a beautiful Noongar woman who I've done some work with recently, Louise O'Reilly, and we were talking about birth trauma and the experience for Indigenous people, even in Perth. And she was very, very clear. Her clear message was a hospital is 100% full stop, end of story, not a safe place for an Indigenous person.
Yeah,
we know the support people trying to do their best in those systems, but it is not a safe place. She shared about how, speaking about that intergenerational trauma again, what came up for her around when she caught her by surprise, but when she birthed, she immediately had this tremendous fear that was not to do with any logic of what was happening at the time, that her baby was just going to be taken away from her. And the reality is that babies are still getting taken away from their mothers in the hospital system. So, yeah, there's a lot we could talk about there.
Yeah, I think a whole new episode on itself, and very important to do that too, I think, as well. So, Claire, it's been an absolute pleasure. I want to make sure that we get to all the details that you need to tell people about. So your programs, your websites, your details, where to find this community of home birthing women that you're online and also in person. So yeah, tell everyone where to find you there.
Yeah, sure. Oh, thanks for the opportunity to share about it. So let's start with the home birth stuff. So the kind of where to start points would be, we have, if anyone jumps on my website, and I'm sure you'll share the details, I have like a drop down which has home birth, and the home birth community, if you click on that one, has all the details about the in-person catch-ups and the online ones. And we have a WhatsApp group that people can join so that they can get regular updates. I was finding, like, you know, everyone's so busy, especially when they get postpartum, that people would forget it was coming up, but I found the WhatsApp group has been really great because people get reminders and then they remember, oh yeah, that's coming up this Friday or whatever.
Right.
And then I also have there a free webinar. So it's a great place for people to start, called Plan Your Dream Home Birth. And it's not about a checklist of like, yeah, I need a birth pool and I need to blow it up 2 weeks before and check that. It's about actually getting yourself really intentionally set with how you're going to direct your energy, your money, and your time during that preparation, which is your whole pregnancy. So yeah, if people want a free place to start, that's a really great starting point. And then obviously all the information for my Yoga for Home Birth program is there too.
Yeah.
And then actually on that, if you like, I'd love to offer listeners a bonus if they do decide they'd like to come and work with the home birth program. So anyone listening to this, I'll give you a code or something, but I'm happy to offer them a free one-on-one 60-minute session with me if they join up for the home birth program. So
incredible. We'll put that in the notes so they can search for it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then, sorry, what was that?
We'll do an Easter egg hunt. So you have to find it down the bottom of the notes, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I think that's really mainly it. If anyone wants to find me on socials, Your Bright Beginning is my handle.
Incredible. Well, thank you again, Claire. It's just, I love hearing you speak. You are an incredibly good speaker and you should know that as well. And just you, I know your passion just exuberates out of you, but I really feel that you do explain it just really so well. So incredible to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Jodie. I'm just so grateful for all the work you do. Revital is such a wonderful hub within Perth, and then all your work further abroad, even just hearing you share about the diverse audience you have for this podcast, getting the word out there about everything to do with, again, people's autonomy, supporting their own wellness and, you know, finding the right support that they need. So thank you.
My pleasure. It's a lot in quality information, right? And knowing where to go for it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks. Until next time, I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and it is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day and we'll see you again soon.